Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Zachary Elwood, author of two books on Poker Tells. Today we'll be speaking to Zach about his second book, Verbal Poker Tells. We'll be speaking to Zach in a few minutes. We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com about the 99.45% version of Deuce's Bonus Video Poker. In this game, sometimes you hold one deuce four-card flushes, such as deuce, ace, 5-9 of hearts. And sometimes with what seems to be a very similar hand, like the deuce, king, 5-9 of hearts, you just hold the deuce. Our listener wants to know what gives. Surely the value of the four-card flush can't vary. Whatever you draw as the fifth card is either going to give you a flush, a three of a kind, or nothing at all. And so far he's right. The four-card flushes are all worth the same amount. But it's the value of the single deuce that varies. Sometimes it's slightly above the four-card flush. Sometimes it's slightly below. The most critical factor in the value of that deuce is whether or not there's an ace in the mix, is either part of the four-card flush or as the fifth card. Having an ace in the mix, meaning there's still only three cards left in the pack of 47 unseen cards, reduces the value of drawing to the deuce by about 3 cents for a dollar or five coin player. So when there is an ace there, the deuce is slightly less than the four card flush. And when there isn't an ace there, it's slightly more. So the rule on the ace is about 80% effective. There's other factors as well. There's thousands of different four-card combinations with the fifth card. But getting most of them right quickly, and when you're wrong, you're not wrong by much, is an efficient use of your resources. You can bring a big computer print out of every last one of worth a quarter of a penny every 6 years it happens, and that's not very efficient. All right, let's talk to our guest. Did you want to say anything about that, Richard?
Nope, never played the game.
And so he doesn't know what I'm talking about yet. All right. Zach Elwood has been playing poker professionally or semi-professionally for about 10 years. He has specialized in reading tells and has written a couple books about it. 2 weeks ago, we spoke about his first book, Reading Poker Tells, and today we're discussing his second book, Verbal Poker Tells. Zach Elwood, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, guys. Thanks.
Now, I was surprised by your definition of verbal poker tells. I assume you were talking about words, but you also include sighs, grunts, and other sounds made by a player. Now, if somebody makes an indeterminate grunt, is it appropriate to say, sorry, English only is allowed in this tournament?
Yeah, you definitely could.
Well, okay, so much for the host trying to be cute. Now, but a serious question. Do grunts and sighs provide useful information?
Yeah, they definitely can. And it was, you know, it's kind of a stretch to include it in under the category of verbal tells because they're not technically verbal. Verbal implies you're communicating something, right? But I figured I'd go ahead and include those in the book. But yeah, you know, like size when betting, you know, can fit the general category of somebody who's, you know, trying to portray somebody with a decision or being upset And so can equal, you know, strength more often than not when someone's betting. You've also got just general being relaxed, you know, like a sigh doesn't necessarily have to be someone faking being disappointed. It can just indicate somebody who's just really relaxed, because otherwise if they're bluffing or anxious, they'd be, you know, people are more likely to be a bit more tense physically. And then you've got, you know, there's the classic Mike Caro's poker clack, which he pointed out in his classic Poker Tells book, which was the sound you make, like the that's too bad sound, like the kind of sound.
Yes.
And you hear that a lot, you know, at the low stakes, like somebody, you know, you don't hear it as much the better players you're up against, but you can still hear that a lot. When somebody bets, they might say something like, guess I'll raise you or something, you know. That kind of thing. It's kind of like fitting a lot, and it's fitting the general weak means strong kind of category. You know, if somebody makes a sound like they are upset or have a decision, you know, they're unlikely to actually have that decision.
I don't play a lot, but I did run into that one time. And when it happened, the guy went and he, you know, kind of shook his head and looked away like he was disgusted. And
and by the way, I'm all in now.
And then when it got to him, he pushed all in, and I actually started laughing. I couldn't contain myself, just because I had never seen it before. I had certainly read about it, but when it happened, I thought, oh my God.
Textbook example. Yeah, you know, it's funny how often you see that. Like, I mean, usually you'll just see it at like the lowest limit kind of levels, you know, and or maybe like a low buy-in tournament, but. You know, it's funny because sometimes you kind of second guess yourself, because you're like, well, that seems way too obvious. Could it really be that obvious? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it is that obvious. But, yeah, you'll see somebody go, like, you know, be like, oh, why'd you do that? And, oh, I guess I'll go all in, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's like, yeah, and that's like really, you know, basic stuff. It's pretty seldom you see that at the one, if against anybody who's somewhat decent. But, yeah, definitely still see it a good amount.
All right. What is the difference between a weak hand statement and a strong hand statement, and which makes for a more reliable tell?
Okay. So weak hand statements and strong hand statements were two categories that I came up with when I was writing Verbal Poker Tells, the book. And basically, to write that book, I spent a lot of time watching a lot of footage and taking notes when I played on anything anybody said. And the, you know, how the hand went down. So I needed a way to kind of take notes and log a lot of these hands, because I, you know, I was taking notes on like probably thousands total. Not thousands of instances of verbal stuff, but thousands of hands total, probably hundreds of instances of verbal stuff. So I needed a way to categorize it. So strong hand statements and weak hand statements were one of the ways, along with some other various logging methods I use to categorize it. And so a weak hand statement is, you know, somebody says something implying weakness about their hand, right? So they might say like, I've just got a draw, or, you know, whatever it is. It can be subtle. It can be really direct. They might say like, I've only got a pair. Don't worry. You know, that's a pretty weak hand statement in the context usually. And a strong hand statement is obviously somebody saying something strong. They might say like, I'm not on a draw, which is a subtle strong hand statement, because they're saying I'm not drawing, I've got a made hand, right? Or it might be like a really direct strong hand statement saying something like I've got a full house or whatever. And there's all kinds of shades of things. And some things are kind of subtle, you know, like they can be more subtle and harder to categorize. But my goal was to try to order things like that. And that was one of the ways I categorized things.
So if a guy says you don't want to bet, right, it's your turn to bet. And he says, you don't want to bet. That's a strong hand statement.
Yeah, exactly. And like, yeah, and you hear people say that kind of defensive stuff all the time, like careful, you know, and, you know, careful implies like, hey, don't bet, you know, it's kind of a joking statement, but it's still, you know, on the surface, it's still a strong hand statement. It's basically saying that be careful. Somebody might have a strong hand. You don't want to bet. And then there's like another subtle example would be, somebody who says, you know, they might say something about the other person's hand strength. They might say something like, "Well, I think you've got a straight, but I'm going to bet anyway." And that's, you know, that's obviously saying that they have a strong hand, right? Now, that's not to say, you know, that these things are always really clear cut, but it was a way to try to, because sometimes people do reverse the meanings of these things, and strong means strong and weak can mean weak. But getting back to your question about what's more reliable, a statement, and in categorizing all these statements that I took notes on from televised and hands I played, the weak hand statement is much more reliable as information. And we're talking specifically about people who are betting here, not so much people who are, you know, on the defensive. But for people who are making bets, weak hand statements are super reliable to indicate a strong hand. And it makes sense when you think about it, too, because somebody who's bluffing or betting a weak hand even doesn't want to make a weak hand statement because they wouldn't want to accidentally encourage an opponent to give an action, right? So people with weak hands are generally much more careful with their language. So how it works is people with weak hands will generally only make strong hand statements, whereas people with strong hands, the case is a little bit more ambiguous there, because people with strong hands are fully capable of making a wide range of statements. Like, they'll make strong hand statements because they're so relaxed. They might, you know, somebody with a full house betting a full house might say something like, "Hey, I've got a full house. Go ahead and call me if you don't believe me," you know, just because they're so relaxed, they don't care. And the same with somebody who's bluffing. Somebody who's bluffing might say a similar thing there because they might, you know, want to actually get credit for having the full house. But what you hardly ever hear is somebody who's bluffing saying something like, "Oh, I don't have a full house," you know. They won't imply weakness about their hand because they just don't want to take that chance. So that's why, you know, strong hand statements are a lot more difficult to categorize from bettors. But when it comes to weak hand statements, especially for big bets, you know, it's pretty reliable if you can categorize someone's statement as a weak hand statement, that it's going to be highly linked to a strong hand.
So something that I say often, but usually only it'll only come up once, but so I'll raise and then get five callers and then say, I see I'm getting the respect I deserve. obviously that's before the flop. So,
right.
I mean, I just think it's a good line. So I don't know. How would you interpret that if you're playing against me?
I would interpret that as Richard trying to be funny.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you got. I mean, experience kind of tells you there's some things that are more meaningful than others, and certain, you know, in different situations. I mean, like that you know, as a general tell, I would think you. And this is not related to strong hands or weak hands, but if a raiser raises and gets called and then makes a statement, usually like early hand verbal stuff generally makes me think that the player doesn't have a strong hand, just because players with strong hands are more focused and generally more stoic and thinking about the situation. Now, that's not to say you couldn't have a strong hand. It just, in a general pattern that I found, is like people that do that are generally on the weaker side, just because they don't like to draw attention to themselves and they're thinking about the situation more. But, you know, it's not to say it's not super, you know, obviously not super reliable. I can imagine you saying something like that with pocket aces, just because you got so many players, you know, and it's a funny thing to say.
Well, right? Also, I just,
you would like
it,
to say that we would prefer saying that with pocket aces over than a 2-7.
Yeah, I would like to say that with pocket aces. I'd prefer, just because I found, yeah, it's actually one of the patterns that I talk about in there, is like when somebody makes references to you know, people who have called them, and it can be post-flop too. It's probably more meaningful post-flop because there's, you know, it's more significant situation. But when somebody says something like, "Oh yeah, you're giving me a lot of respect," or something, you know, especially if it was heads up, you know, just the fact that they're verbalizing earlier in the hand is a sign that they're maybe not as focused on the situation as they could be.
I think once I get five callers to a raise, I don't think I'm going to be bluffing at that point. You know,
right?
What I mean?
Exactly. So, yeah. It's like it's not
probably
like
going to be out of the hand unless I hit. So
yeah, it's not like you're only basing your decisions on somebody's verbal.
All right, I got a question on ethics. Now, at the table, you ask me if I have a full house right after I make a big bet. I say no, I don't. You call, and I turn over a full house, basically lying like a rug.
Right.
Have I broken the rules, either spoken or unspoken?
Well, there's different rules for tournaments. Cash games are much more lenient. You know, most cash games, if you're heads up, you can say whatever you want. I think the rule, even in the strictest tournaments, though, I don't think you would have broken a rule, because my understanding of the rules of tournaments is that you can, as long as you don't actually say what you actually have, then you are not breaking the rule. That's, so the fact that you said no, you didn't say what you actually had, it would have been different. My understanding is it'd be different if you said, yes, I have a full house, and then you turned out to have one. As illogical as it is, that my understanding is that is actually against the rules, whereas saying no would not be against the rules. So.
Now, is that the Jamie Gold rule?
It's related to it. I mean, I think a lot of tournaments, they call it the Jamie Gold rule, referring to talking. I mean, I think there were some of those rules in place before Jamie Gold, but I think Jamie Gold just drove it home that that people had to enforce that more, because I think it just made it more publicly known that it was theoretically an issue. I mean, to me, as you might guess, I just like behavior in general. I like when people act in different ways. So I'm totally for the Wild West. I don't care about the rules and regulations when it comes to talking about your hand. I'm all for people saying whatever they want, you know, within reason. Especially heads up, I feel like you can say whatever you want.
I agree. I think that's crazy that they don't let in tournaments, that they want to discourage talking, especially in televised tournaments where the audience wants to, you know, see some engagement, you know.
So right.
The more they talk, the more interesting it is.
Yeah, and I think they've realized that. I mean, I think I've seen discussions about that and it bears out in the televised footage, because I think they've realized that they need to not be so strict about that stuff. So I think it's a real gray area, because, you know, there's many ways you can influence people and there's many ways to talk about your hands, but like, it's only in these rare instances where anybody cares about them when they're really over the top. Yeah, most of the instances go, you know, everybody gets away with and it's entertaining, you know, like it's a real fine line, like Negreanu in this World Series of Poker footage. Like he might say something that seems like obviously an attempt to discourage someone from raising in a multi-way pot. But, you know, if he had said it a little bit differently, it would have been much more clear-cut, you know, a violation. But, you know, it's just saying it's a really gray area. You know,
I was playing in a game at the Wynn, and it was a low-stakes game, and there were a bunch of tourists in the game. And this guy showed up who was clearly a Vegas local and I'm sure thought of himself as a pro.
Did he have a baseball hat on backwards?
He did have on a baseball hat, but I don't know that it was backwards. But anyway, he got into this hand with a tourist and shoved all in on the river and said, "I have the flush." And the guy wasn't – the tourist wasn't paying attention at all. And now our hero – says to the guy, "Oh, I'm sorry, I announced the hand. I didn't realize you were still in. I already told everybody I have a flush," you know. And the tourist still was not getting it and was trying to call. And it now became really obvious to anybody who's at all a player that this guy did not have a flush, because he kept going on and on about how he had already announced it because he didn't know that you hadn't called yet.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, the
tourist called.
No, the tourist threw his hand away.
Oh.
And now the guy turns over his cards and shows that he's got nothing, you know, and just puts it in the guy's face, like, you know, telling the tourist what an idiot he is. And, you know, and I just thought, what an asshole, you know. I don't know, maybe that's a strategy to get everybody at the table mad at you, but
Right, there's definitely those people that will do that. If anybody's been watching the World Series of Poker, there's one of those guys that had been featured pretty heavily, where he's, you know, it's one of his strategies to get under his opponent's skin, you know, and it's illogical. I mean, he's actually, if anybody's watched it, it's Justin Schwartz, who's been playing on the World Series of Poker, and it's one of his things to purposely try to get under his opponent's skin a bit, and he says it's, you know, it doesn't reflect who he is off the table. It's just a stance, you know, a thing that he does to try to tell those opponents a bit.
It seems to work for Mattisau.
Yeah, I just know that.
All right. What is a non-aggressor speech?
Okay, so another way I was categorizing, trying to categorize verbal statements was trying to segment them into aggressor statements versus non-aggressor behavior. So aggressor versus non-aggressor is just a way to break it up from somebody who's betting and playing the aggressor in the hand versus somebody who's checking and calling, you know, who's on the non-aggressor side. And because I saw differences in how behaviors play out for those two groups, because the a non-aggressor is more likely to have potentially defensive, defensive speech, you know, like somebody, like we had talked about earlier, like somebody saying, careful, you don't want to bet. You know, that's like the textbook simple case of somebody being defensive. But as it turns out, you know, most talking at all from somebody who's the non-aggressor, it will usually indicate a weak hand, no matter what it is, really, just because, and the main reason for that is because when somebody's the non-aggressor and they have a strong hand, they basically don't want to get in the way of their opponent giving, you know, keep continuing to bet or whatever it is. They're basically, slow playing, or they're keeping a secret until they announce themselves that they have a strong hand. So, and those players don't like to talk because they don't want to discourage action. So you'll find that most players who are the non-aggressor with a strong hand will be quiet, versus people who have weaker hands have more incentive to talk and maybe discourage action, or they're just relaxed and not really focused, and so they tell some, you know, they might make some joking statement or whatever it is. So you'll find that a lot of the non-aggressor talking is coming from players with weaker hands in general.
What is misdirection, and how do we exploit it?
Misdirection was a category I came up with. Well, I actually took it from just, you know, general verbal, that I had make that word up, obviously. But it's a way of, it's a thing people do when they want to subtly misdirect you away from, direct your attention away from the true meaning behind some action, you know, whether it's a check or a call or a bet or a raise, you know, like, I'm trying to think of a good example here, you know. Somebody says, well, a lot of times you'll hear it with regards to betting or raising. Somebody with a strong hand will say something like, they'll put in a pre-flop raise, and they'll say something like, well, everybody's raising, I'll raise too, something like that. It's just, I mean, that's a kind of an obvious one, but the idea is they're trying to make some excuse for their action that's not, you know, that's not real. It's just trying to direct away from the true reason for their action. Or else somebody has pocket aces and an aggressive player in front of them raises in front of them, and they say, John raised, I guess I'll raise, you know, trying to indicate the idea that they're only re-raising because an aggressive player raised and not due to the strength of their hand. And there's those are kind of obvious ones, but there's more subtle ones too that come up.
Does this include things like when they look at the TV and say, what's the score? Or, you know, did Chicago just score? That kind of thing, when they move the conversation off the table?
Oh, I don't think that has – I never really thought about including that in those. Yeah, but it's just referring to – my idea was just referring to the purely talking about the hand in progress.
Yeah.
Because I think when you talk about misdirection off the table, I mean, there's sometimes reasons for people who are weak to do that too. Like somebody who's bluffed, you know, sometimes has reasons to act interested in other stuff too. That can happen. So it's less clear cut, I think. Then you've got another example would be like, it doesn't just happen with people who bet. You might have somebody who makes a who checks, and it says, you know, says something like, oh, it's just you and me, you know, I'll check, you know, like implying like, oh, we're, you know, we're friends, let's just check it down kind of thing, right?
Right.
You have a general rule. Players who express uncertainty or concern before, during, or after making a significant bet will generally have strong hands. Now, this sounds to me a whole lot like Mike Caro's theory that if you're weak, you pretend you're strong, and if you're strong, you pretend you're weak. Is this the same, or is there something subtle that I'm missing here?
Yeah, it's the same concept. I mean, yeah, and Mike Caro, you know, definitely had, you know, that's a basic rule of most poker tells, you know, especially the real basic ones you see from lower stakes unskilled players. And yeah, it's the same idea basically. You know, when somebody's showing concern or uncertainty of whatever sort, it's generally going to be because they're strong, you know. I mean, especially if that's associated with a bet, if they're the aggressor or whatever. Similar idea.
All right. Now, the three of us, you, me, and Richard, are playing poker, maybe with some other guys too. On particular hands, you end up playing heads up with me, and you ask me, will you show your cards if I fold? Assume I say yes. Later in the evening, you're playing heads up with Richard, and you say, will you show me your cards if I fold? Richard says no. Which one of those responses is most useful tell-wise?
The no response is more useful. And that's a question you hear a lot. Anybody who's played poker has probably heard that question a lot. Will you show if I fold, right?
Yeah.
Happens all the time. And usually it's just because somebody wants to, it's not like they're being tricky. They just genuinely want to see the cards, right? And usually it works. Like somebody will, you know, a lot of times it works. Somebody will show the cards. But, you know, it can be used for information gathering purposes. And sometimes it's just a way to try to get a sense of how the person reacts, not necessarily what they even say. But with regards to people who respond to that, when somebody says yes to that, there's not that much meaning because there's lots of cases of people saying yes with both strong and weak hands, and you'll see that a lot. Like you'll see somebody who's strong, they're just relaxed and say, yeah, sure, I'll show you. You also see players who are weak who want their opponent to fold say yes because they just want to fold. And so it's kind of like strong hand statements in a way. But when somebody says no, especially when they're, you know, on the more abrasive or rude side about it, it's meaningful because it indicates that they're relaxed, just because a player who's bluffing and asks that question will usually not want to risk agitating or irritating their opponent by saying no. So it's usually the people that are willing to say no and risk irritating their opponent are usually on the stronger side and more relaxed. Usually if somebody's bluffing and gets asked that question, they'll either not say anything or they'll, you know, respond in a, you know, vague, ambiguous way that, you know, is not going to irritate their opponent. And that's why, yeah, so when you hear somebody say no, and especially if it's done, like, you know, sometimes you'll hear people be like, get irritated with the question and be like, no, just play your hand or whatever. You know, that's really much more highly likely to be a strong hand just because they're willing to show agitation and risk irritating their opponent.
Is their thinking correct that if you irritate your opponent or act aggressively toward your opponent, they're more likely to call you?
Not versus a good player, but the thing is, it is entirely possible some random player will, you know, who's not that experienced, will spite call you, as they say, and just if you rub them the wrong way, they'll just be like, you know, F you, I'm calling. You know, it doesn't make much sense, but you know, you see it all the time. It's like,
so that somebody can certainly be exploited then.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's all about your specific read of an opponent. But if you thought somebody was likely to, to respond in an angry, you know, impulse call you way, then it might be to your benefit to do what is the common pattern anyway, and say no when you have a strong hand to try to irritate them.
Do you ever see people say, yeah, I'll show you, and then the guy folds and the guy mucks his cards and doesn't show him?
I mean, yeah, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, most people are not trying to be that mean at the poker table, I would say, and they don't want to make enemies. So usually when somebody says they'll show it, I would say like 95% of the time. That, you know, and that's why it's also interesting too, because I sometimes just ask it, not trying to get a read or anything, but just because it does actually make the person more likely to turn their cards over after you fold. So it's in that way, it's just an information gathering tool, because whether the person's strong or weak, you know, they might if they say yes, there's a very good chance they'll turn it over.
What about when a guy says, I'll show you one? And not that you asked to see him, you know, but I hear this pretty often. I'll show you one.
Yeah, that varies a good amount. I mean, I think I've seen that a good amount from both strong and weak hands. I think there probably is a little bit more likely to be relaxed for your average player just because it's kind of a playful thing to say, and somebody who's bluffing usually wouldn't want to say something that playful because it might make their opponent suspicious. So I think in general it'll be more likely relaxed.
And when they do show you one, is there something that you can infer based on which one they've showed you?
Oh, do you mean they're going to show you one after you fold, that kind of
thing?
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, obviously you know one card, which could help you narrow it down. But,
right, but yeah. I mean, I think when people say that, it's not a bluff. You know what I mean? When they show you one card, the other one is probably the best card that could possibly go with it.
Oh, you're saying when they show you before you fold it?
Oh, no, I didn't think you were allowed to show before they fold.
Oh, well, you can in cash games, not in tournaments.
Ah.
Oh, you're talking about after the fold.
Yeah, after the fold.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably show you the weakest one. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that they probably wouldn't show you one card if it was a bluff.
Oh, okay. Well, I agree. It's if they're agreeing, and if they say I'll show you one when you fold, I do think it's more likely to be a relaxed behavior.
Yeah.
When you become attuned to listening for verbal tells, does most of the benefit come from what others do, or most of the benefit come from you becoming more aware of what people can read and hence starting to eliminate these tells from your game?
Oh, I think, you know, for your average recreational player who just plays, you know, every once in a while, I think the main benefit is just being able to eliminate the tells and the leaks from their own game, just because, you know, I think it's much harder to read other players accurately than it is to eliminate your own obvious, you know, leaks of information. And I think for your average player who just plays, like, you know, once a week or once a month or whatever it may be, it's much more important to eliminate those small leaks, just because, you know, all it takes is, you know, a few observant opponents who can take advantage of those occasional leaks you might have, and you're losing a good amount of money there, versus, you know, it's much more work, obviously, to try to understand other people's behaviors, whereas it's pretty easy to get a grasp of what you might be leaking and eliminate it.
You provide a free 5-email course on your website, readingpokertells.com. People can sign up for this. Now, what is found in the book on verbal poker tells that isn't in the emails?
Well, the emails are pretty short. I tried to make the email course as valuable as possible, considering it's just 5 emails, and I put all the best information that I could get from the book fit into one 5-part course, like 5 of the best tips, basically. But the book's pretty long. I mean, the book's got a lot more stuff about specific behaviors. The course kind of gives you some basic ideas, and I think they're valuable, but I think the book itself goes into a lot more specific patterns, and a lot of the specific patterns are kind of like ways that some of the general concepts play out in specific ways, and I try to categorize those. As you see, it's basically for ease of spotting them, but a lot of them have the kind of underlying same reasoning and motivation behind them. It's just they play out in different ways in different situations.
What do you see as the area where, I mean, this doesn't have to do with tells, but where do you think players that are trying to improve are, what's the area they should be focusing on?
Oh, for sure strategy. I mean, this tells stuff is, you know, don't get me wrong, it's just, it's like the icing on the cake, you know, and that's what Dan Harrington said. That was his expression about tells value. It's strategy should be by by far the thing people focus on, because that is where good players make, you know, 95% of their money, is just thinking about the strategy and focusing on getting a great strategy. The tells are kind of like an extra thing where, like, if you're already a winning player, or, you know, it's good to focus on to get a little bit of edge. Or if you're, you know, even if you're not a winning player, it's good to learn about them for limiting your own tells. But yeah, it's such a small part. I mean, I'd be the first to admit that it's just a really small part of winning live poker, you know?
And do you, in terms of strategy, do you think the areas that, where you see them losing the most money, is it that they're not tight enough, or they're not aggressive enough, or what?
Oh, I'd say it's just not a lack of understanding of ranges, of how to, you know, to think about ranges of, as opposed to thinking about one specific hand your opponent might have. It's thinking about the range of different hands that they might have, and what is your best course of action considering that range of hands, and not trying to pick one or two hands and put your opponent on it. And also, you know, thinking about your own hands that way, thinking about, like, not just how I play this one hand, but how would I play all my range of hands in this specific situation, and being balanced, because you're basically thinking about how your range of hands looks to your opponent at the same time, assuming that they're, you know, putting you on a range of hands. So it's this idea of thinking about those concepts, which, you know, a lot of beginner players just don't think about. They're just thinking about, how do I play my hand? You know, they're thinking about it very one-dimensionally. But the more deeper you go into the game, you realize it's a very complex game. And, you know, it's when you get down to the pure numbers behind it, it's much more complicated than chess. Just the amount of combinations, you know, especially with no limit, with the bets, theoretically infinite amount of bet sizings and stuff like that.
You have some videos for sale, and there are also some very excellent free videos that you can get on YouTube.com that you made not so long ago when you worked for Card Runners, I think. Mm-hmm. How are these videos different from each other?
Oh, well, the old videos were just pretty low budget affairs. I made a few for Card Runners, and then I just made some free YouTube ones. Didn't put too much effort into them. But the ones I made recently, I partnered with Windy City Poker Championships, which is an organization in Chicago that videotapes and televises cash games and tournaments. And so I partnered with those guys, and I've been using their footage to create a specific course of video, PokerTales videos. And right now I have 13 of them, and I want to add some more over the next year and in the future too. But yeah, so I've been combing through that footage and using that footage to put together a course about common tells that show up. And so each video, you know, has like 5 to 8 examples of a specific, you know, specific behaviors from these real poker footage hands, and trying to show, you know, how they show up and practical ways to maybe use that information.
So now that you had access to these guys who made the show, did you have access to the raw footage so that the camera doesn't cut away after the guy makes his bet?
Oh, that's the unfortunate part. No, I don't yet, but for the existing footage, but I'm actually working, because we're partnered, I've talked to them about that issue, and it's more of just a space issue. Like, they don't record all the raw footage, they just record the switcher as it switches. So, but one thing we're going to do is we're going to set up another camera that captures a wide angle, so that way I can get, you know, I can get more footage that way, and then if I want to go back and get that footage, I can. So that's one thing that we're going to set up, so I can actually get better footage.
Are there different tells available in heads up situations compared to those in multiple player situations?
Yeah, I think the dynamic is much different, just because in heads up situations, people are much more on their guard and much more competitive and willing to fight for the pot, versus in multi-way pots, people are much more relaxed because they're, you know, not as willing to fight for the pot as much, and more willing to give away signs of not being interested and being, you know, not being focused, or, you know, expressing like genuine disappointment or whatever it may be. Basically, you know, some tells are more likely to show up in multi-way pots just because people are more relaxed.
Last 2 weeks ago, we let you go too early. And so we ended up, Richard and I ended up speculating on a question we were originally going to ask you. So we're going to ask you this question now and see if you're smart enough to agree with Richard and me. In general, my experience is that women are more empathetic and able to read other people's faces better than men are. Presumably, this would translate into women being better able at mastering tells than men would. Do you think this is true?
I'm going to plead the fifth on this one. I don't really know. I mean, I think I don't have any firsthand experience about which sex, if any, is better at reading expressions. I mean, I don't really know.
I want to ask you about, so there's another guy who's written some books, or at least one book, on tells. I think the guy worked for the FBI. His name is Joe Navarro.
Joe Navarro, yeah.
And now, in your book, I mean, I don't want you to talk trash about the guy, but you were kind of dismissive about some of his conclusions. And I just wanted to talk about – because my impression is that Joe Navarro is not a poker player, right? He's an FBI guy that is more into human behavior.
Yeah, and he admits he's not a poker player. Like he's – and you can tell he's definitely not a poker player. I mean, he would be the first to admit that he's barely played any poker.
Huh. And so can you talk about some of his conclusions that you thought were off the money?
Yeah, and I actually wrote an article about this because it was something that I saw frequently come up, not just with Joe Navarro, but other kind of behavior experts who were more general, you know, human behavior experts or who claimed to be, and they would try to apply these concepts to poker and often would fail, I thought, in pretty obvious ways. And I finally got around to writing an article about why I thought this was. And the main reason I thought it was because they were trying to apply these concepts of general, general ways that people show that they're nervous or anxious or confident. And they're trying to apply that to poker, which is inherently a game where, you know, you're rewarded for hiding those things or reversing them entirely. It's kind of like I compared it to somebody who's getting interrogated in a police interrogation, which is like, you know, what Joe Navarro would be getting a lot of his, experience from, that kind of context. But somebody who's getting interrogated, like let's say a guilty person is being interrogated in a police interrogation, they don't have a motivation to conceal their anxiety that much because, theoretically, like there's all sorts of reasons for somebody to be anxious or worried when they're being interrogated, which a normal person, you know, a non-guilty person would have those instincts too. They might have an instinct to lie, verbally lie better and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of those concepts, like somebody who's nervous is going to, you know, do pacifying gestures like wiping their lips or licking their lips or rubbing their neck, that might make sense in a interrogation or a general human behavior sense, but like at a poker table, somebody who's nervous and bluffing has no incentive to rub their neck or lick their lips or do all these other things that we, you know, generally regard as signs of anxiety. That's an example right there. Is like in Joe Navarro's book, he talks about these pacifying gestures, as he calls them, and says that they're signs of anxiety reducing, you know, like rubbing the neck or rubbing the face or licking the lips or whatever it may be. But in reality, when you look at the actual evidence or if you play any poker at all, you basically never see anybody who's bluffing do those things. You might see somebody who's waiting to fold or something do those things because they don't care anymore. But like a bluffer has no incentive to ever do these things that are kind of obvious signs of a stress reduction, right?
I was thinking that his knowledge might actually apply better to table game players trying to read the mood of the pit bosses. Because, you know, pit bosses are often trying to disguise the fact that they're nervous of your play.
Right, they're stressed or, yeah.
Yeah, or they very purposefully turn their back to you, you know, when they're on the phone and sometimes glance over their shoulder at you, you know.
Right, and that's a more normal way to where normal concepts of stress or relaxation would play out, right? Because a pit boss isn't necessarily thinking, like, I got to hide my emotions from these people, right?
Right.
It's more, I mean, they might be thinking on a superficial level, but it's not like they're, you know, really, really cognizant of, like, I'm not going to rub my neck, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So when you are putting down a big bluff, it's smart to rub your neck, so to mislead anybody, any alert player at the table?
Well, you know, there's definitely cases where false tells can make sense, and I wrote a good amount about this too. I'm not a big proponent of false tells for a few reasons, but there's certainly certain situations where it makes sense. Like if you're playing against people you don't know, if you think that your opponent is smart enough to read into your behavior in the way that you want them to read it, you know, like they have to be pretty experienced to get that, because, you know, what might happen, like the worst case scenario is you do something like rub your neck when you're betting a strong hand because you rub your neck when you're bluffing because you want to make them think, you know, that you're strong, and then the person, because they're not that good, sees you rubbing your neck and they're like, oh, he's bluffing, I'll call him, you know. So there's always this risk you take when you're trying to do these weird tricky tells, because you have to really be pretty sure that an opponent is not going to, like, you know, just completely misread the, because some people just look for any excuse to call you. That's the other thing. You know, if they're not that good, it's what Mike Caro called the calling reflex. They're just looking for an excuse to put their chips in the pot, and they see you do something weird and they're like, that's why I called him. I saw him rub his neck.
All right. We've been talking to Zachary Elwood, his two books, Poker Tells, Reading Poker Tells and Verbal Poker Tells. I learned a lot from them. Thank you, Zach. It was very informative interviews.
Thank you, guys. It was a lot of fun. If you ever want to talk in the future, let me know. I'm sure we could.
Well, actually, tell me about these 13. Send me 13 videos, and I'll look at them, and we'll design some questions about those. I always like good deals, so we might be able to do some business.
I'll send them to you right now.
Hot damn! This is a good guy. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Zach.
Bye.
Richard, I think I just made you, signed you up to listen to some videos.
Videos, yeah.
South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. This coming Monday, November 9th, earn 200 same-day points and receive a Hamilton Beach electric knife. As a casino gift goes, a $15 to $20 gift for very little play is an extremely good deal. You keep your points. The following week, earn 1,100 video poker points or 500 slot points between Sunday, November 15th and Friday, November 20th. And you can pick up a free frozen turkey and serving platter between Sunday and Wednesday of the following week, just before Thanksgiving. Again, you keep the points. Finally, Thanksgiving Day, November 26th, earn double points on video poker, 10 times points on penny slots, 5 times points on all other slots. Midnight to midnight, no machines excluded, no limits on the points you may earn. Tomorrow's free video poker class is Advanced NSU Deuces Wild. This will cover all of the penalty cards and other exceptions from the basic strategy. More generally, you get a better understanding of the nature of penalty cards for any video poker game. Everyone's welcome, but you should at least have a working knowledge of NSU strategy to get value out of the class. Otherwise, we'll be talking to exceptions and you don't know what the basic is, and it's tough. At the Palms, every Friday is a drawing where 10 people earn a total of $10,000, with the top prize equal to $3,000. Multiple drawing entries occurring Friday afternoon and also Friday evening. You do not need to be there at 7 o'clock, but if you don't collect by midnight, your prize evaporates. If you activate at least 10 tickets on Friday, on Saturday you get $10 of free play to download. Saturday from 7 to 10 p.m., and on Thanksgiving Day all day long, double points on all video poker machines and 10 times points on slots. PFP, play for prizes. From now until November 13th, you may earn gift cards for the Best Buy electronic stores. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday, up to $190 a day, at the rate of 0.2%. You keep your points. For the last 2 weeks of the month, you'll be earning gift cards for Albertsons supermarkets. For the following week, November 30th through December 5th, players receive free slot play for their points up to $190 a day. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. You get the strategy from me or Shaq's website, but if you want correction, go to videopoker.com. This week's contest is 10 Play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coin per line game where periodically the fifth card dealt is a dream card, meaning it's the best possible card of the remaining 48, given the first four that you got. If you don't think they give you the best possible dream card, you can change it. The return on the game is always higher if you play 10 coins than 5, but the amount that is higher ranges pretty widely. According to the Wizard of Oz website, the amount gained ranges between 0.02% and 1.5%. It's a pretty big range. You do not have to learn special strategy for the game. If you know how to play the base game, you know how to play Dream Card. The frequency of the Dream Card varies a lot by the game. In Jacks or Better, where all four of a kinds pay 125 coins, you get lots of Dream Cards. In Triple Double Bonus, where an extra ace can turn into 4,000 coins, you'll receive considerably fewer Dream Cards. So if you're going to play Dream Cards, Jacks or Better is a lot more fun to play, even though, generally speaking, it's a lot more boring game. All right, Richard, we got about 45 seconds. How do people get our stuff?
We encourage your questions. Send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. If you want the show delivered to you automatically every week, you can sign up for that at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. To get an archive of all the old shows, you can get that at bobdancer.com. Next week, our guest is going to be Dewey Tomko, who is a famous poker player and gambled at golf for about as high as you can gamble. So should be a good show.
And then we taped that interview not too long ago. It was good.
Yeah.
So you definitely want to catch it. Thank you, Zach Elwood. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. Money.